In Beowulf, the hero wins the attention of a queen called Wealhtheow. She's serving beer to a gathering of men, and this is what it says here. He took the cup, the warrior fierce in battle, from Wealhtheow, and then spoke. One ready for fight, Beowulf spoke, the son of Ithtiel. And this is a quote. I resolved when I set out on the sea, sat down in the sea boat with my band of men, that I should altogether fulfill the will of your people, or else fall in slaughter, fast in the foe's grasp. I shall achieve a deed of manly courage, or else have lived to see in the meat hall my ending day. And we're told then that these words pleased her, and that gold adorned, she went to sit by her lord. My colleague Catherine Ball tells me that boasting was a customary male activity in the Anglo-Saxon mead hall. So it's not surprising, at least not for the time, but not for our time either, that hearing him talking about his exploits pleased her, even though the exploits Beowulf was boasting of have not yet taken place. In fact, he sounds a little like Cassius Clay predicting what he will do to Sonny Liston. This scenario, a woman wooed by a man's boasts of exploits in battle, brings us another of Shakespeare's icons. Remember the story of Desdemona and Othello. Desdemona fell in love with Othello because of his telling about his great deeds. As Othello tells, quote, how I did thrive in this fair lady's love, he explains that she became entranced when she heard him telling the story of his life, and this is how he puts it. Wherein I spoke of most disastrous chances, of moving accidents by flood and field, of hairbreadth scapes in the imminent deadly breach, of being taken by the insolent foe. And he goes on like that. And then he says, my story being done, she gave me for my pains a world of kisses, and bade me, if I had a friend that loved her, I should teach him how to tell my story, and that would woo her. And of course, he wooed her by telling the stories himself. Well, of course, these old examples aren't any kind of proof that the differences I've been describing are biologically based, but they're kind of fun to think about, if nothing else, because they're examples of patterns that we take for granted now, going back so far. Clearly, though, and this is the point that I'll be stressing in this lecture, there's an inextricable intertwining of biology and culture. Paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould also bemoaned the fact that he was constantly being asked, which is it? In an interview in the New York Times that was published in February 1993, Gould emphasized, quote, that biology and environment are inextricably linked, that the influence of one cannot be disengaged from the influence of the other. It's logically, mathematically, philosophically impossible to pull them apart, he's quoted as saying. It's a true union of influence. And then Gould adds, but I despair of getting people to understand that. Kind of amusingly for me as a linguist, Gould blames language for adding to the confusion. He's quoted as saying, it's unfortunate that there's a linguistic similarity between the words nature and nurture. That has helped keep this ill-formulated and misguided debate alive. I believe that if the words nature and nurture didn't rhyme, a different pair of words would be fine. A different pair of rhyming or alliterating words would have to be found to reflect this dichotomy, because people are obsessed with the dichotomy itself. I'd like to illustrate the way in which I would argue that biological and cultural influences are inextricably intertwined with reference to this phenomenon of males' greater aggression. Anthropologists Beatrice and John Whiting, for example, compared children playing in six vastly different parts of the world. One of their most consistent findings across all these cultures was that boys at all ages were significantly more aggressive than girls. Okay, that would seem to support the finding that there's a biological basis to males' aggressive behavior, and I wouldn't question that there is. But the Whitings also note that in all six cultures, girls were more often given responsibility to care for younger siblings. They spent more time at home with their mothers, and they did more housekeeping and cooking chores.